This is Ashley Vandekar. I'm a psychiatry resident and a fellow with the Group for Advancement of Psychiatry. In today's episode, I'll be interviewing Dr. Andrew Brown. Dr. Brown is lead psychiatrist for the Boston Police Department. He'll be discussing how we, as psychiatrists, can help support our patients during COVID-19, specifically those patients who are essential workers.
This is Andrew Brown. I'm a psychiatrist with the Boston Police Department.
So how do you distinguish between fear and anxiety? Because at least with the patients that I've seen, it seems to be all kind of meshed together. And there's such a pronounced feeling of these people who have gone their whole lives to become what they are, whether that's in the tech sector, the healthcare sector. And now they're afraid to go out and do their job because they see their friends who were, quote, safe at home, and they're going out to provide an essential service in whatever realm that, and they feel mixed together, their fear of going out with their anxiety, which is just overpowering for some of them.
So fear is often a very rational, reality-based response to a situation threatening or potentially threatening. It's important to be aware of one's fear. I think an appropriate and relevant idea to communicate that, in a sense, we're glad that they are feeling fearful. We're, in essence, normalizing. And so a lot of the immediate aftermath of officer-involved shootings tends to involve a tremendous amount of overwhelming fear. And one of the most critically important and therapeutic things that one can do is to normalize the response. And with COVID-19, I think that is applicable here, right? Because it's rational to have fear, we want to normalize that response. And then, of course, there's anxiety, which is really quite distinct from fear. I think most people, once their attention is called to the distinction, I think most people are fairly capable of readily distinguishing the two, right?
So I hear you distinguishing out between fear and anxiety, and it sounds a lot like the DSM distinction between the two, right? Like the DSM-5 is looking at fear as being your emotional response to the now threat, whereas anxiety is looking, or they refer to it as anticipation of the future threat. This becomes a little bit challenging now with COVID-19 because the fear is also anticipatory. It keeps going on, and it has no end date in sight. Given that merging of fear and anxiety, although they're distinguishable, there's overlap, how do you suggest that we support our patients?
We are playing to the patient's strengths. How is it you got into this critically important field? You know, what is it about your temperament, your talents, your makeup, your skills, your way of being in the world? What is it about that equips you so well to do this type of work? And I think if one listens carefully around that kind of an orientation, one often gets clued in pretty quickly about what interventions, what are the recommendations.
So what you're suggesting is almost like a psychodynamic guided type of intervention, looking at the patient's strengths, why they got into this field in the first place, and helping to guide them and provide support. But let's back up. Give me something a little bit more basic, some recommendations that we can give right at the get-go.
Get plenty of exercise, take care of yourself, get plenty of sleep, meditate or pray or stay connected to other people. Don't be overly concerned about asking for help. These are sort of common sense, basic mental hygiene. But I think what's unique, what we as psychiatrists have to offer is unique, because when folks come to us with concerns, hey, my colleague or my friend gets to stay home safely, why do I have to expose myself to this risk? What we have the ability to do is try and understand where this individual is coming from and try to understand what this particular individual's concerns are right now. What we do conforms more closely to what is called coaching.
It makes a lot of sense. And I think the frame of coaching as opposed to therapy is really in line, and it's kind of a form of supportive therapy, right? That we're going through, and that being a coach is another way of viewing that.
Right.
And I think the fear and anxiety line is the one that even when we're coaching and we're helping people to realize their strengths can become a little bit esoteric, especially with people who have family members at home, and that their anxiety and their fear are both very rational. They're trying to figure out how to deal with their desire to fulfill their professional obligations and expectations with their fear and their anxiety about bringing something home to their family. How do you help people process rational anxiety when it interferes with an essential service?
So the first thing one does is essentially acknowledges the reality and the legitimacy of many of the fears that they're having. Simply say to the, yeah, this is really a predicament that you're in, that we're all in right now. This is a really tough call. I understand why this is arousing so much anxiety in you. I mean, in a sense, I'd be more worried about you if you weren't anxious, something like that. The definition of anxiety is, as opposed to fear, the distinction is fear tends to be circumscribed, well-localized, readily identifiable as a threat. And so as a result, we can do things to neutralize the threat. Anxiety is just general, pervasive, right? The Greek god Pan sort of was omnipresent, and we call it a pandemic because it's everywhere. But this is not the time to exploratory therapy. This is the time perhaps to explore a little, but the only reason we're exploring a little bit is so that we can support the troops in the field. One thing that I do that I think people find extremely helpful is one of the things we're doing when we're supporting people is we're supporting their capacity to make good decisions. Nobody knows what's going on now. Nobody knows what to make of this. We know a little bit, but we still don't know nearly enough. We don't know how to protect ourselves individually as a society adequately. People feel very comforted when you learn enough about them to legitimately and credibly inform them that you're very impressed with their capacity to make good, reasoned, enlightened decisions and judgment. I think that goes a long way, because I think a lot of what fuels anxiety in times like this is, what am I going to do? What should I do? So all we have to do, and our job, is give them the level of self-confidence they need, acknowledge that it's an extremely difficult time for everybody, for ourselves as well as them, is because we're human beings and we're confronting the same situation. Help them reason and figure out some type of compromise that they can live with, right?
It's not just the patients that are experiencing, but it's us as mental health professionals, as doctors, as psychiatrists. How would you recommend that we handle our own countertransference when we're in the same boat as many of our patients, and avoid letting our own anxiety infiltrate these sessions when we're trying to be a neutral, supportive coaching practitioner?
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about my personal experience working with police officers. We learned very early in our training that self-disclosure, right, is a very dicey kind of thing. Told that you can only do it under this set of circumstances, and you should never just do it spontaneously without thinking about it. You should always explore why the patient is asking you. And I took that to heart, and I had always done that. But you know what I found in the police department? That there's no way I can do the work I'm doing if I have that kind of attitude. At least with police officers, at least in that culture, I've just had to completely put that away. Generally, when officers ask me about my personal life, which they do all the time, within reason, I will simply tell them. I'll simply tell them. They knew they couldn't trust me as soon as I asked them, oh, why are you so interested in where I went to medical school, right? Or whatever, right? And so I think it'll go a long way when we're working with patients in this crisis to simply acknowledge, as long as it's true, yeah, it is a really, it's totally normal now to feel a little scared, feel a little bit like indecisive, to really not know what line of risk is, where the line is as far as what's an acceptable level of risk, what's an unacceptable risk.
So Dr. Brown, I want you to tell me, if you were to enumerate three things that psychiatrists should focus on when they're working with essential workers who have both fear and anxiety about doing their job, What would those three things be?
One very important principle, normalization. It's a very, very novel experience now for just about everyone. Very few people have lived through anything remotely similar to what we're going through now. Normalize reactions that are really quite appropriate often and really correspond to the reality of the situation. The other thing to keep in mind that's implicit in the first principle really is what we do in times like this, do a little bit of exploration of the particular individual's vulnerabilities, but the only reason we're exploring the individual's history and specific situation and how the individual got to be where they are now is so that we can help shore up the strengths, help support the strengths that they have, that have enabled them to get through life, often quite successfully and adaptively. And implicit in those two general principles is I wouldn't be overly reticent to self-disclose, to mention that, hey, when I came to work this morning, I didn't know, should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? Is that just going to make people more panic? And we as psychiatrists, our role is to support those nascent capacities or those quite developed capacities.
So today, Dr. Brown discussed how we, as psychiatrists, can help support those patients of ours who are essential workers. He emphasized, one, the importance of normalizing fear of an identifiable threat and anxiety about generalized future unknown threats. Two, providing supportive therapy in the midst of an acute crisis, meaning that we're supporting a patient's strengths and their capability and abilities as decision makers. And three, loosening up our own restrictions on self-disclosure so as to humanize ourselves and allow our patients to benefit the most that they can from therapy, given the collective nature of the shared stress associated with COVID-19.